So now we're going to hear about the six Goswamis of Vrindavan from Srinivasacharya. He's giving a description of their activities, and we are following in their footsteps. So if we pay close attention to what they do, and then we do the same thing, there will be some successful. What is that called? Mahajano yena gata sapanta. Where else is that mentioned, that this is the path to success? Following those who are authorized and advanced. Where does it say we can make advancement by doing that? Mahajano yena gata sapanta. Wouldn't you follow? Mahatsevam dvara mahurava muktes. That's service to the Mahatmas by following them, that service, right? Where else? Is it mentioned in the Nectar of Instruction? All the Bhakti Shastri students? Where in the Nectar of Instruction does it say that one should follow the previous acharyas? Just do the whole verse and you'll run into it. All we're missing is a microphone. You get 1% credit for that.
Utsanishadherya tattat karmapavartanat sangastago satovarte sadbir bhakti prasidyati.
Okay, now extract what we're looking for. This is an important point, because just by following those who are advanced, then we can become advanced.
Satovarte.
Give him Nectar of Instruction. See, we're wealthy. We have all the books here. Some people don't have this. They don't have all these books, but we do, so we're going to take advantage of it. We don't care what anybody says. I mean, we do, but that's why we have the books. They're on the right-hand side, stacked up. No?
Here, we have.
You have it? Lucky for you.
Should I read the whole text?
Yeah, just give us some nectar. Following, we just want you to enlighten us. We're on the edge of our seats, practically. Wait a sec. Okay, now we're on the edge of our seats. I don't want to be duplicious.
Following the footsteps of previous acharyas, the six principles of doubt. So we're talking about satovritti, means following the footsteps of previous acharyas. There are mahajanas who have showed by their life and teachings how to progress in devotional service. There are 12 mahajanas, and all their lives, how they acted, what teaching they have taught is exemplary and to be followed by us aspiring devotees.
Shatovrate, is that what we're looking for in that? And what's the word-for-word translation?
Sata is great previous acharyas. Vritte is by following in footsteps.
Vritte
by following in the footsteps.
Shatovrate. So by following their footsteps, that's all we have to do. How about Bhajare Munayotagre Bhagavan Tamatoksajam Satvam Shuram Shemaya Kolpante Yenutaniha. I don't think it's in your shloka book, but it's from Divinity and Divine Service. And everyone should, or sometime soon, know all the 34 verses in that second chapter, Divinity and Divine Service. Get the 34. In that verse, Bejure Muniotagre Bhagavanta Madoksajam Satvam Bishuram Shemaya Kalpante Yenutaniha. It means that previously all the great sages worshipped Lord Vishnu because he's beyond the mode's material nature, and therefore they attain the highest benefit. And anyone who follows those sages, the same method that they used, is also eligible for liberation. And Prabhupada, did you get it? You're also eligible. So Prabhupada indicated that it's not that you have to be a great acharya, mahajan, or saint. You can be anybody. But if you follow those previous great saints who did these things, then you're also eligible for the same thing, same result. That's important. So just follow in the footsteps and then you get everything. And also in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, the second chapter, there's a verse by the demigods to Lord Krishna within the womb, in which they say that by following the great sages, the ocean of the material world shrinks up, to the size of the water contained with the hoof print of a calf. Do you know the verse? That's a different verse, but Samasritaye Parapallava Plavam. This is another verse from the 10th canto, which says that one who meditates on Krishna constantly, it's page 249, Twayambhujaksha Kila Satvadani Samadina Veshita Chaitasaike Twatpada Potena Mahatkritena Kurvanti Govatsa Padambhavabdim. So this means that one who meditates on Ambujaksha, the lotus-eyed Lord, Akila Sattva-Dhamni, he's the original cause of existence from whom everything comes, from whom everything emanates. Samadhina, constantly. Chaita-Saike is complete absorption, means Chaita-Eka. That's all he has, is consciousness in one place. Twatpada-Potena Mahat-Kritena. So Mahat-Kritena means that action which is considered the most powerful original existence, or which is executed by the Mahajans, Kurvanti. That means Kurvanti Govatsa. Those previous Mahajans, for themselves, they make the path simple, and then anybody who follows them, it's also simple for them. And when you even approach the boat means the process they've left behind, and the reason it's effective is because it's accepted by Krishna. And so if you approach the boat, then the ocean shrinks up. And then you can just step across. It's that powerful, this idea of following in the footsteps. And also we hear this word anu. Anu means to follow. So, yasmin sarvani bhutani yatmaivad buddhvijanataha. You have it? Yasmin, you were going to say that. Okay, then take it. Where's the quadrant 3 microphone? It's over there. That's the quadrant 2. You just took quadrant 2. That's quadrant 3 over here.
Yasmin sarvani bhutani atmaiva bhut vijnanatah tatrako moha kah shoka ekatvam anupashyatah. So anupashyatah means of one who sees through authority, or one who has constant one who sees constantly like that. So in the purport also, Prabhupada at the end he talks about this word anupashyati. That means one should understand this seeing all living entities as spiritual spark in the line of the authorities. Like how the spiritual masters, acharyas, they have explained how to see everyone as a spiritual spark. That is the way one should understand.
Nice.
And one very interesting thing, question was asked by one Prabhupada disciple, Prabhupada, that regarding this same thing, that, you know, seeing living entities as spiritual spark, or seeing Krishna everywhere. So he had a doubt. So he was asking Prabhupada, Prabhupada, is it like seeing Krishna everywhere means I see Krishna picture here, I see Krishna over there, and then I see them both merging together. So he was saying something like this to Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, no, that doesn't mean seeing Krishna everywhere. Then Prabhupada said, Prabhupada then gave example of the shoes of the spiritual master. So when Prabhupada says, when you see the shoes of the spiritual master, you remember the shoes of the spiritual master. When you see this speck, you remember that it belongs to the spiritual master. Similarly, when you see everything in this world, you should see that everything belongs to the spiritual, to Krishna. And that's how you see it, Krishna everywhere.
Hmm.
So,
Hare Krishna, welcome. Hare Krishna. Do you have the shoes of your spiritual master, Jainidhi? Do you think of him when you see his shoes?
Do I think of what?
Do you think of your spiritual master when you see his shoes? I know, because I gave him a pair of shoes from his spiritual master. Okay. This is a very important point, this anupashyati. Systematically sees. It's translated as systematically sees, and we take it as following the footsteps what the previous acharyas have said. Once in the assembly of Mahaprabhu, a devotee came and wanted to offer some commentary on the holy name, some interpretation on the holy name's commentary, special commentary, and Mahaprabhu said, I only know two names, Krishna's Yashodananda and Samasundar. I don't know anything else. And this person said, but also I want to tell you my commentary on the Bhagavatam. He said, because Sridhar Swami, he takes it only according to the context. But I have a better commentary than Sridhar Swami. And Mahaprabhu didn't want to hear it. He said, anyone who contradicts the Sridhar Swami, the Swami, then he's a prostitute. Because he's going away from the Swami. So I don't want to hear. So Mahaprabhu showed this principle also that sticking to the previous acharya, the line of the previous acharya, is following in their footsteps and taking their advice as it's being passed down in that way. So this is the way to see properly anupashyati. Yes.
But sometimes, Prabhuji, this in some seminars they give an example of how if there is one instruction that's given by the first person and then in the process of communication, the real message is not the same thing and it boils down by different people. So they don't believe in this ascending process because they say that because it's coming from person to person to
person.
You
mean descending process?
A descending process, sorry. Yeah, descending process is not because when communication, there may be some communication gaps or the original information may be misrepresented like that. So how do we say that?
It's very high tech though. Because we have checks and balances. We have Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra to check it. So we have this triangulation, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, to confirm what the actual message is. Something's gone haywire with this microphone all of a sudden. Hare Krishna. Maybe if your other mic's on, you have to turn it off. I'm not sure, but there's some funny sound coming out. Hare Krishna, that's better. So you have to check and see how it's coming down. So we have Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra to authenticate the actual message that's being passed down. Yes.
Ji, I was going to add that even Krishna agrees that as the message gets passed down, it gets distorted. He says that in fourth chapter when Arjuna.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yoga nashta parantapa, that Krishna says, you know, the material world's enervating. Look up enervating. Innervate. N-E-N. Are you an English major? Nice. So enervate. So enervation means that the energy is taken out of everything as it goes. It becomes diminished. Yoga nashta parantapa. So Krishna renews the message. He's overseeing that process also to make sure that it comes back to life. Yes?
Innovate would mean to deprive of strength or vitality, weaken. And it's derived from the Latin word innervare, which would, the etymology would be ex, would mean ex and nervous. Ex would mean out, and nervous is something like sinew.
Look up vitiate.
Vitiate.
V-I-T-I-A. Vitiate. So, say more. Go ahead. Pardon me? Yeah.
Vitiate would mean to impair the value or quality of, or to corrupt morally, debase, to make ineffective or to invalidate.
So it becomes vitiated. Over time. Krishna says this to Uddhava in the 11th canto.
The Latin meaning of vitiate. It comes from the word vitiate, that would mean fault.
Fault.
To make it faulty.
Faulty. So Krishna talks about this to Uddhava in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam also, and he says that over time the message does become obscured. So it has to continually be brought back into focus. That has a lot to do with the parampara and how one after another it's brought back into focus. Even we see in the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur that even so recently Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had given his teachings and danced on this planet, that the teachings had been vitiated and then changed in many different ways, and people weren't following correctly. And he had revived that through Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, through that kind of triangulation, and he brought back the focus of Lord Chaitanya's actual teachings and then passed it on to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta and so on. One has to be constantly vigilant to do that because there's a tendency for it always to pull apart. Yes. You'll have to use the microphone. That's the first quadrant. Give him third quadrant. He's in the back.
So this is I think in the fifth chapter of the first canto, Prabhupada describes, he defines what is realization.
Yes.
And he says realization means presenting, I'm not sure, maybe...
Get a first canto.
Fifth chapter. It defines realization as understanding the subject and then presenting it in a manner that the audience can appreciate it and understand it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how he defines realization. And I thought that in this discussion about deviation, one has, you know, it might, one has to really walk the thin line of being chaste to the teachings, at the same time also be in a position to present things in a way that people can understand. Because many a times the lingo that we use in ISKCON is not necessarily, people might get it, because it takes quite some time to understand the lingo of what we usually speak. But then being able to present it in a way that people can understand. So that's another...
Keeping it relevant.
Yeah.
According to the time, place, and circumstance, so that people can understand the essential message. But you're saying as it's not necessarily changing it, but it's presenting it according to one's realization, so that other and according to other people's capacity to understand something. There's an art to that. Here, why don't you give him this book? He can find that. This is a really important purport. Another thing? Yes, yes. Microphone.
So it means we can change form, but meaning should be, we should keep meaning, right? What does, how we represent information, we can change form, right?
Well, it depends what you mean by form.
You can show it in different ways.
Yeah.
You can explain the same meaning in different ways.
Yes.
Right? Based on different people.
Yes.
Right? Based on different backgrounds.
Yes.
Right. You can show, you can say in Sanskrit everything, you prove something, because for them it doesn't mean anything. Right.
Right.
So we can, how we can distribute this knowledge to people. Right. We're supposed to kind of use some like a nice cover, but we should keep meaning. Like, I mean, so they can understand what does it means.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So yeah, it's basically we should speak to their language, right?
Right. Well, you know, you look at Prabhupada's articles he was writing for the original BTGs, and you see that there are topical subject matters, you know, according to what was going on at the time, that people could relate to, and then he'd bring Krishna consciousness into it, and also presenting in such a way. As an example, you know, we have a picture of changing bodies, this changing bodies exhibit, and it's in the original changing body, it's obviously a white male, and there's an older changing bodies. It looks outdated now because you can tell from the clothes, you know, that it was done in the 70s or the early 80s, just the clothes they're wearing, and also he's carrying a Time magazine. Other devotees look at it and say, you know, he should be carrying an iPad at that age or something. And then also in Africa, when the BBT just redid the Changing Bodies exhibit, they made sure that it was an African-American Changing Bodies and not, you know, an American, because in an all-black country and you present some white guy changing bodies, it becomes irrelevant. And I've seen that before, too. Even at San Francisco State, we were distributing one day, and somebody looked at the changing bodies. It was an African-American, and he said, you know, this doesn't mean anything to me. This is a white guy, you know. But if it had been an African-American changing body, he might have looked at it a little bit more and been able to appreciate it. So, you know, when we preach in different cultures and different languages, we have to learn how to inject the philosophy in such a way that people can understand and appreciate it.
I'm just, what I came from, the background, right? What I meant by this. Because most of the time, some of the time, right? People are so attached to forms, like religions, right? Different forms, but the same meaning could have. So, I mean, how to can represent information so people can attach to knowledge rather than to forms? Because you can represent the same knowledge in different ways, in different colors, and in different backgrounds, and different cultures, etc.
You're saying how to do it?
Yes.
Well, very expertly defining out what the basis is. For instance, when talking about the essential aspects of a religious process, we could say to somebody, and I have in conversations before, that there's a gold standard that we're looking for, and that is ahaitukiya pratiyata, that the Srimad Bhagavatam gives this standard that pure devotional service should be unmotivated and uninterrupted. There's no there's no material motivation, otherwise we call it a cheating, dharma prajitakaitavo. So that translates anywhere. We don't mind whatever the culture is or whatever the external process. We're looking for the gold standard. Is what you're doing unmotivated and uninterrupted? And that can translate across all kinds of cultural boundaries. You can understand and discuss what's motivated or unmotivated devotional service. As an example, when I was in Tokyo, I stopped and picked up a Watchtower magazine from the Jehovah's Witness. And I was reading it when I got to the Govinda's restaurant. And I was telling my friend Satyadev that often I find that people from the Jehovah's Witness are pretty close-minded. And then just around that time, the restaurant was clearing out, and the owner of the restaurant, who's Madhu Mangal Prabhu, came over and said, I have somebody to introduce you to. And he was a Japanese man, and he's a Jehovah's Witness. What a coincidence. I was sitting there reading Watchtower, talking about Jehovah's Witness, saying how I found them to be kind of close-minded. And he said, I have a friend here. He's Jehovah's Witness. He wants to meet you. So we started talking to him, and he said that I've read your spiritual master's books, and I can see that they're unmotivated, that you don't have any motivation for your service. In other words, it's pure. You're not asking something from God. And we talked on that level. That's what he was appreciating, that your movement is actually a pure movement because it's doing these things, or it has that standard, I should say. And that conversation was fruitful based on that, his appreciation and our, you know, that we're talking about that basic principle. And it didn't matter to him what tradition we came from. And so those who are progressive, they can see beyond just the external trappings of a particular tradition. And after all, even within Vaishnavism, there are many different traditions. There are four different sampradayas even, and they have different flavors. But after all, they're all leading to the same place. They're all going for Vishnu. Prabhupada compares it to political parties. Of course, nowadays it may not be as applicable, but he said just like you have Democrats and Republicans, and there are opposite opinions, but oftentimes. But really, their goal is for the good of the country. It's to do good for the country. They're interested in the United States of America or whatever country they're in. Those opposing political parties. So there may be various sampradayas that are bringing the knowledge down, and they may seem at opposition on some points, but actually on the basic points, they're not at opposition. So one has to be an essence seeker and find out what is the essential thing. And it's very important in outreach and preaching, because if you're able to find what that commonality is and connect with that first, then it's much easier and better. It's much easier, and it's more conducive to bringing people closer to finding out how to connect as soon as possible. Is that all right? Okay. Yes, you got it. Good. Give him the microphone. Hare Krishna.
So it's the fourth chapter, the very first verse, the appearance of Sri Narada.
Fourth chapter, very first verse. Thank you for finding that. That's so important.
First canto. So I'll just read the translation. On hearing Suta Goswami speaking thus, Saunaka Muni, who was the elderly, learned leader of all the rishis engaged in that prolonged sacrificial ceremony, congratulated Suta Goswami by addressing him as follows. And then Prabhupada talks about Sri Saunaka Rishi had all these qualifications, and thus he stood up to congratulate Sri Suta Goswami, where he expressed his desire to present Srimad Bhagavatam exactly as he had heard it from Sukadeva Goswami and also realized it personally. Personal realization does not mean that one should, out of vanity, attempt to show one's learning by simply trying to surpass the previous acharya. He must have full confidence in the previous acharya, and at the same time, he must realize the subject matter so nicely that he can present the matter for the particular circumstances in a suitable manner. The original purpose of the text must be maintained in italics. No obscure meaning should be screwed out of it, yet it should be presented in an interesting manner for the understanding of the audience. This is called realization. The leader of the assembly, Saunaka, could estimate the value of the speaker, Sri Suta Goswami, simply by his uttering Yatha Ditham and Yatha Mati, and therefore he was glad to congratulate him in ecstasy.
Huge contribution to the conversation. Thank you very much. Keep that. You'll need it again, I'm sure. Thank you. Beautiful. Anything else? Okay, we're going to hear about the six Goswamis. Did you get anything out of that, Gandharvika? Satisfied? Okay, six Goswamis. This is on page 21. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatan Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are always engaged in chanting the holy name of Krishna and dancing. They are just like the ocean of love of God, and they are popular with both the gentle and the ruffians because they are not envious of anyone. Whatever they do, they are all pleasing to everyone, and they are fully blessed by Lord Chaitanya. Thus, they are engaged in missionary activities meant to deliver all the conditioned souls in the material universe. 2. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus, they are honored all over the three worlds, and they are worth taking shelter of because they are absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Sri, Sri, Radha, and Krishna. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, who are very much enriched in understanding Lord Chaitanya and who are thus expert in narrating his transcendental qualities. They can purify all conditioned souls from the reactions of their sinful activities by pouring upon them transcendental songs about Govinda. As such, they are very expert in increasing the limits of the ocean of transcendental bliss, and they are the saviors of the living entities from the devouring mouth of impersonal liberation. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, who kicked off all association of aristocracy as insignificant. In order to deliver the poor conditioned souls, they accepted loincloths, treating themselves as mendicants. But they are always merged in the ecstatic ocean of the gopis' love for Krishna, and they bathe always and repeatedly in the waves of that ocean. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are always engaged in intensely worshipping Sri Sri Radha and Krishna in the transcendental land of Vrindavan, which is filled with peacocks and flocks of swans, cuckoos, and cranes. In Vrindavan, there are also beautiful trees full of fruits and flowers and having roots inlaid with all valuable jewels. With great delight, the Goswamis bestow upon the living entities the boon of the goal of life. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis who are engaged in chanting the holy names of the Lord and bowing down in a scheduled measurement. In this way, they utilize their valuable lives, and in executing these devotional activities, they conquered over eating and sleeping and were always meek and humble, enchanted by remembering the transcendental qualities of the Lord. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis who are sometimes on the bank of the Radhakund Lake, sometimes on the shores of the Jamuna, and sometimes in Bamshibat. At these places they appear just like madmen in the full ecstasy of love for Krishna, exhibiting different transcendental symptoms in their bodies, and they were merged in the ecstasy of Krishna consciousness. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis who chanted very loudly everywhere in Vrindavan, shouting, O Queen of Vrindavan, Radharani, O Lalita, O son of Nanda Maharaj, where are you all now? Are you just on the hill of Govardhan, or are you under the trees on the banks of the Jamuna? Where are you? These were their moods in executing Krishna consciousness. Shad Goswami ki jai. So we're following in the footsteps of the six Goswamis. Particularly, we're known as Rupa Nugas. So we follow Rupa Goswami, Rupa Anuga. Yes. Why are we called Rupa Nugas? Because Rupa Nuga is the Rupa Goswami is the leader of the six Goswamis. He is was specially empowered by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to bring his teachings to light.
But Rupa is anger to...
Pardon me?
Rupa is anger, Rupa Goswami is anger to Sanatana.
Yes, some in his writings, Rupa Goswami mentions Sanatana as his spiritual master, his older brother. But in the esoteric science, we take Rupa Goswami as the leader. We better get Srivas Pandit in here because I can't tell from the picture. Do you know? Okay. Oh, really? We need Srivas Pandit.
No, I don't know the pictures. I had a question. So Prabhuji, when he says that, when Rupa Goswami says that Sanatana Goswami is his spiritual master, he means like a Shiksha Guru, right?
Yes.
I have a real basic question here, Prabhu, that I don't know why I don't know the answer, but I'm going to look like an ignorant fool and ask it anyway. And that is why if today is Krishna Janmashtami, Krishna's birthday, why is Artika at midnight?
Well, Krishna appeared at midnight.
He did appear at midnight, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, he went to get Srivas? Okay, we'll get him back sometime. He has to come back sooner or later. Okay, we're continuing in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 1, Text 56. Atakala apavrate devaki sarvadevata putran prasu suve chastau Kanyam Chaivanu Vatsaram. Each year thereafter, in due course of time, Devaki, the mother of God, and all the demigods gave birth to a child. Thus she bore 8 sons, one after another, and a daughter named Subhadra. Purport. The spiritual master is sometimes glorified as Sarva Deva Mayo Guruhu. By the grace of the Guru, the spiritual master, one can understand the different kinds of devas. The word deva refers to God, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the original source of all the demigods, who are also called devas. In Bhagavad Gita 10.2, the Lord says, Aham Adir Hi Devanam, I am the source of all the devas. The Supreme Lord Vishnu, the original person, expands in different forms, Tad Aikshita Bahusyam. He alone has expanded into many, Advaitam, Achutam, Anadim, Ananta Rupam, Brahma Samhita 5.33. There are different grades of forms known as Shvamsha and Vibhinangsha. The Shvamsha expansions, or Vishnu Tattva, are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whereas the Vibhinangsha are Jiva Tattva and are part and parcel of the Lord. Mamayavamsho Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatanaha. If we accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and worship Him, all the parts and expansions of the Lord are automatically worshipped. Sarvarhanam Achuteja. Krishna is known as Achuta. Senayorubayormadye ratam stapayami Achuta. By worshipping Achuta, Krishna, one automatically worships all the demigods. There is no need of separately worshipping either the Vishnu Tattva or Jiva Tattva. If one concentrates upon Krishna, one worships everyone. Therefore, because Mother Devaki gave birth to Krishna, she is described here as Sarvadevata. 57. Kirtimantam pratamajam kamsyanan na kutodubihi arpanyam asakrishchena santad ati vivalaha. Vasudev was very much disturbed by fear of becoming a liar by breaking his promise. Thus, with great pain, he delivered his firstborn son, named Kirtiman, into the hands of Kamsa. Purport. In the Vedic system, as soon as a child is born, especially a male child, the father calls for the learned Brahmins, and according to the description of the child's horoscope, the child is immediately given a name. This ceremony is called Namkarana. There are 10 different sangskars, or reformatory methods, adopted in the system of Arnashram Dharma, and the name-giving ceremony is one of them. Although Vasudeva's first son was to be delivered into the hands of Kamsa, the Namkarana ceremony was performed, and thus the child was named Kirtiman. Such names are given immediately after birth. Kim tu shaham nu sadhunam vidusham kim upekshitam kim akaryam kadaryanam dushyajam kim tritatmanam. What is painful for saintly persons who strictly adhere to the truth? How could there not be independence for pure devotees who know the Supreme Lord as the substance? What deeds are forbidden for persons of the lowest character, and what cannot be given up for the sake of Lord Krishna by those who have fully surrendered at his lotus feet? Purport. Since the 8th son of Devaki was to kill Kamsa, one might ask what the need was for Vasudev to deliver the firstborn child. The answer is that Vasudev had promised Kamsa that he would deliver all the children born of Devaki. Kamsa, being an asura, did not believe that the 8th child would kill him. He took it for granted that he might be killed by any of the children of Devaki. Vasudev, therefore, to save Devaki, promised to give Kamsa every child, whether male or female. From another point of view, Vasudev and Devaki were very pleased when they understood that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, would come as their 8th son. Vasudev, a pure devotee of the Lord, was eager to see Krishna appear as his child from the eighth pregnancy of Devaki. Therefore, he wanted to deliver all the children quickly so that the eighth turn would come and Krishna would appear. He begot one child every year so that Krishna's turn to appear would come as soon as possible. Drishva samatvam tachchaurehe satyachaiva vyavastitayim kamsam stushta manarajan prahasan idam abravet. My dear King Parikshit, when Kamsa saw that Vasudev, being situated in truthfulness, was completely equipoised in giving him the child, he was very happy. Therefore, with a smiling face, he spoke as follows. Purport. The word samatvam is very significant in this verse. Samatvam refers to one who is always equipoised, unaffected by either happiness or distress. Vasudev was so steadily equipoised that he did not seem in the least agitated when delivering his firstborn child into the hands of Kamsa to be killed. In Bhagavad Gita 2:56, it is said, Dukeshvanu vignamanaha sukeshu vigatas priyaha. In the material world, one should not be very eager to be happy, nor should one be very much disturbed by material distress. That's 2:56. Dukeshu vignamanaha sukeshu vigatas priyaha vitaraga bhayakrodas ditadir munur uchate. Krishna says, one who is not disturbed in mind, even amidst the threefold miseries, or elated when there is happiness, and who is free from attachment, fear, and anger, is called a sage of steady mind. This is verse number 256, second chapter, 56 verse. Purport. The word muni means one who can agitate his mind in various ways for mental speculation without coming to a factual conclusion. It is said that every muni has a different angle of vision, and unless a muni differs from other munis, he cannot be called a muni in the strict sense of the term. Nasavrishir yasya matam nabhinam, Mahabharata Vanaparva says, but stitadir muni, as mentioned herein by the Lord, is different from an ordinary muni. The stitadir muni is always in Krishna consciousness, for he has exhausted all his business of creative speculation. He is called Prashanta Nishesha Mano Ratantara, from Stotra Ratna. One who has surpassed the stage of mental speculation and has come to the conclusion that Lord Sri Krishna or Vasudev is everything, Vasudeva Sarvamiti Samahatma Sudur Labaha, he is called Muni, fixed in mind. Such a fully Krishna conscious person is not at all disturbed by the onslaughts of the threefold miseries, for he accepts all miseries as the mercy of the Lord, thinking himself only worthy of more trouble due to his past misdeeds. And he sees that his miseries, by the grace of the Lord, are minimized to the lowest. Similarly, when he is happy, he gives credit to the Lord, thinking himself unworthy of the happiness. He realizes that it is his duty only to the Lord's realizes that it is due to only to the Lord's grace that he is in such a comfortable condition and able to render better service to the Lord. And for the service of the Lord, he is always daring and active and not influenced by attachment or aversion. Hansapriya, is everyone being daring and active out there? Yeah?
Did you come in here?
No. We're just checking because we read that the in the service of the Lord, one should be daring and active. So tell everyone they should be daring and active. Attachment means accepting things for one's own sense gratification, and detachment is the absence of such sensual attachment. But one fixed in Krishna consciousness has neither attachment nor detachment because his life is dedicated to the service in the service of the Lord. Consequently, he is not at all angry even when his attempts are unsuccessful. Success or no success, a Krishna conscious person is always steady in his determination. He's a stitadir muni. Dukeshvanu vignamanaha sukeshu vigatasriyaha vitaraga bhayakroda stitadir muni uchate. Do you all have that verse in front of you? Dukeshu anuvignamanaha dukeshu anuvignamanaha Sukeshu vigatas priyaha. Vitaraga paya krodha. Stita dhir muniruchate. Duke swanu vigna manaha. Sukeshu vigatas priyaha. Vitaraga paya krodha. Stita dhir muniruchate. Duke swanu vigna manaha. Sukeshu vigatas priyaha. Vitaraga paya krodha. Stita dhir munir uchate. Somebody else? Go.
Dukeshvanu dvigna manaha.
Dukeshvanu vigna manaha.
Sukeshu vigadaspraha.
Sukeshu vigataspriyaha.
Vitaraga paya krodha.
Vitaraga paya krodha.
Stita dhir muniruchate.
Stita dhir muniruchate. Okay, you're hired. Pass it on though. Dukeshvanu vigna manaha. Sukeshu vigatas priyaha. Vitaraga paya krodha. Stita dhir muniruchate. Dukeshu anu vigna manaha. Sukeshu vigatas priyaha. Vitaraga paya krodha. Stita dhir muniruchate.
Dukeshva anu vigna manaha.
Dukeshu anu vigna manaha.
Sukeshu vigatas pruhaha.
Sukeshu vigatas priyaha.
Vitaraga paya krodha.
Vitaraga paya krodha.
Stita dhir muniruchate.
Stita dhir muniruchate. Anyone? Where's our quadrant 3 microphone?
Dukeshu anudvigna mana.
Dukeshu anudvigna manaha.
Sukeshu vigatas priyaha.
Sukeshu vigatas priyaha.
Vitaraga paya krodha.
Vitaraga paya krodha.
Stita dhir muniruchate.
Stita dhir muniruchate. Dukeshvanu vigna manaha.
Yeah.
Sukeshu Vigatas Vriyaha. Vitaraga Bhaya Krodha. Stita Dhir Muniruchate. Dukeshu, in the threefold miseries. Anudvigna manaha, without becoming agitated in mind. Sukeshu, in happiness. Vigatasprayaha, without being interested. Vita, free from. Raga, attachment. Bhaya, fear. Krodaha, and anger. Stitadhi, whose mind is steady. Munihi, a sage. Uchite, is called. You can turn off the microphone out there because it's causing some static. If your microphone is on, okay. One who is not disturbed in mind, even amidst the threefold miseries, or elated when there is happiness, and who is free from attachment, fear, and anger, is called a sage of steady mind. So now you always remember that verse from Janmashtami. And here's the purport. The word samatvam is very significant in this verse. Samatvam refers to one who is always equipoised, unaffected by either happiness or distress. Vasudev was so steadily equipoised that he did not seem in the least agitated when delivering his firstborn child into the hands of Krishna to be killed. In the Bhagavad Gita 256, what does it say? In Bhagavad Gita 256, Dukeshu anuvigna manaha, Sukeshu vigatas priyaha, Vita raga bhaya krodha, Stita dir munir uchate. Gandharvika, we should have a whole box of those. So we have prasadam, and then everyone should get a big box of those books that we give out. Thank you very much for coming. We're so happy you came. Please come back. There's some mahaprasadam for you also. Hare Krishna. Well, look at Vasudev is handing over his newborn children to be killed. Do you think this qualifies for this verse? Dukeshu anuvigna manaha, Sukeshu vigatas priyaha. He's undisturbed. He's doing his whatever he has to do in this situation, but he's remaining undisturbed. This is why Prabhupada says the word samatvam is very significant in this verse. Samatvam refers to one who is always equipoised, unaffected by either happiness or distress. Where else does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita that one should be equipoised and unaffected by happiness and distress? Use a microphone in quadrant 2.
Matra sparsas the kunte ya shistos na sukatukada agama paino nityas tam tatikshwa shabarata. Is that right?
Yeah. This word titiksha means that one should tolerate, and Krishna is saying that the happiness and stress, it comes like winter and summer seasons. And in some cities, actually, like in Denver, Colorado, there's a saying, if you don't like the weather, just wait 10 minutes because it'll change. Here it may be, you wait another day or a week, but all you have to do in the material world is wait and things will change. There's a saying, all things must pass. And past they do in the material world, they're always moving, always changing. And therefore, those who are attached to the spiritual world, which is non-changing, it's a different world. Parastas matu bhavo no vyakto vyaktat sanatana yaksak sarveshu bhuteshu madbhaktim labhate param. No, I transposed two verses. I'm sorry. This spiritual realm is not subject to vyakta and avyakta, creation and destruction, manifest and unmanifest. The material world sometimes manifests and sometimes unmanifest. The spiritual world is permanent. You have it there? Parastasmatu pavo nyo vyakto vyakta sanatanaha yaksak sarveshu bhuteshu nashyatsu navinashyati. There it is. Nashyatsu navinashyati. It is beyond the avyakta and avyakta. Parastasmat tu pavonyo. There's another creation. Krishna is describing the material world as being created and annihilated over and over again. But the spiritual world's not created. There's another creation. Paras, it's supreme. Parastasmat tu pavonyo. Vyakto vyakta sanatana. It's eternal. It's not vyakta and avyakta. It's always there. Always manifest. So, those who are rooted in that spiritual world, their consciousness has already gone there. In other words, they're not party to this material world. Even though I may be active here in this material world, appearing to go through the motions of working and gathering things and so on, because I'm rooted, because one is rooted in the spiritual world, his or her consciousness is not affected by the changes of this material world. And those who are rooted in this material world are constantly disturbed, because whatever we have here will be taken away. Sometimes it comes and sometimes it goes away. We mentioned in the class yesterday, there's a Bengali aphorism. When translated, it says, and it sums up the entire situation in this material world, that I built this beautiful house for my satisfaction, and now it has burned to the ground. Everyone's smiling and nodding, because there it is, in a nutshell. Whatever we build up will be burned to the ground, one way or the other. Prabhupada told us a story about a sage who had a lot of hair. And he would live for one day of Brahma for every hair on his body. And he lived by the Ganga very simply, no house, no shelter, just took whatever came naturally. And he got some followers, actually. He didn't ask for followers, but people began looking after him. And they came and they said, well, why don't we build you a house or some shelter here? You know, you're exposed to all the weather. And he said, no, I'm not here for very long. So one who actually is rooted in the spiritual world and sees that this is my home is not disturbed by the comings and goings of this world, the manifest and unmanifest, dukeshu anuvigna manaha, that the miseries that come, they mostly affect our mind. The mind interprets it as happiness and distress. And the in the purport of that verse, dukeshu anuvigna manaha, which is 256, Prabhupada described the mentality of the devotee that whatever dukkha comes, he takes it as the arrangement of the Lord. When misery comes to the devotee, he takes it as Krishna's arrangement to make him more serious about spiritual life. And he also thinks of it as a token, that I've been given this because of my unlimited sinful activities in the past. But now Krishna's very kind. He's reduced all that, and he's just given me a little bit of misery from what I deserve. And when happiness comes, he thinks, I didn't deserve anything, but Krishna is giving me some special facility so I can serve him more. And he's very kind. And a materialist thinks in the exact opposite way. When happiness comes, when good fortune comes unannounced, then a materialistic person will say, well, you know, what do I need God for? I'm so smart, I'm a genius. Look what I did. I got all this material facility myself. And when extreme misery comes, he says, why do bad things happen to good people? There must be no God. But someone with Sukriti always turns to God. Chatur vidha bhajante mam jana sukritino arjuna arto jignasa artarti gyanicha bharatarshaba. Four kinds of people who have Sukriti. The pious credit, when they're distressed, when they desirous of money, when they're inquisitive, and when they're in knowledge of the absolute truth, they turn to Krishna. And Krishna says, Techam Gyani Nitya Yukta Eka Bhakti Vishishite Priyohi Gyani Notyartam Aham Sacha Mama Priya. Those who are wise, who are knowledge, they're the most dear to me. And in the nectar of instruction, we have a gradation of consciousness, of conscious people mentioned. Karmi bhyah parito hare priyataya vyaktim yaryor gyaninas tebhyo gyani vimukta bhakti parama premaika nishtastata tebhyastha pashupala pankha jajishastha bhyo pisaradika. There's a description by Rupa Goswami of the gradations in human society. Karmi bhyash, he starts with the karmis who are working hard, trying to manipulate the laws of nature. They're also called elevationists. They're trying to use whatever loopholes they can find in the Vedas or anywhere else to elevate themselves to a better position in material life. They're also dear to Krishna because at least they follow the Vedic process in some way. So they're connected. Karmi bhyash parito. Then come the gyanis, and they become intelligent. Krishna mentions bahunam gyan, bahunam janmanamante gyanavanmam prapadyate. There's a class of people called gyanis who become intelligent and they become uninterested in the material world. And when those gyanis mature, they become bhaktas. Just like in the desert, one may see a mirage. It looks just like water. And animals will run for that water and drop dead trying to taste it. And those who are karmis, they drop dead trying to taste some material happiness, but it's not really there. It always eludes them. It's receding as they chase it. But gyanis figure out that it's fake water in the material world. It's an illusory happiness here, no substance to it. And therefore they stop running, but after all, they are not productive because they're not moving anymore. Whereas the bhaktas actually identify the source of the illusory water, which is in the spiritual world, and therefore Sriya Kanta Kanta Parama Purusha Kalpataravo Druma Bhumish Chintamani Ganamai Toyam Amritam Kataganam Natyam Gamanamapi Vamsi Priyasaki Chiranandam Jyoti Paramapi Taraswadyam Apicha Sayatra Shirabi Sravati Surabhi Bhyash Jasumahan Nimeshar Yakyo Vavrachati Nahiya Trapi Samayaha. That the spiritual world is full of enjoyment, it's full of movement. And the living entities there are all effulgent and full of tastiness. And the Surabhi cows are given oceans of milk. And Krishna is there surrounded by the Mahalakshmis, the goddesses of fortune. So it's the most opulent place. It's the real water is there. It's flowing and everyone's enjoying like anything in Krishna's association. That's where the real thing is. So the bhakta, he doesn't become caught in the illusory pursuits of this material world, and he doesn't also give them up out of frustration. But he finds the real water by the association of bhaktas who carry that within their heart. Bada bhavad vida bhagavatas tirta bhuta svayam vibho tirta kurvanti tirtani swantak stena gadabrita. Yudhishthir identified Vidura as a walking place of pilgrimage. In other words, he carried the spiritual world within his heart. That real spiritual water was there in his heart. Bhavad vida bhagavatas tirta bhuta svayam vibho. He said, you're a walking holy place. And so if one gets the association of a walking holy place, then one can actually taste something, really taste that there's real water, there's actual enjoyment. And it doesn't come in the material world, which is full of frustration. Naishkarmyam apyachuta bhava varjitam nashobate gyanam alam niranjanam kutakpuna shashvara bhadramishvade nacharpitam karmanya apyakarnam. Narada Muni told his disciple Vyasadeva that self-realization that doesn't include achuta bhav, that is this emotion for achuta, for Krishna. Like today, look at Krishna, he's so beautiful. He, he's, he's all attractive. His form is attractive. His smile is attractive. His name is attractive. Madaram, madaram, baparasya vibhor. Madaram, madaram, badaram, madaram. You know the verse? There's a verse. He's sweet, sweet, sweet. Everything about Krishna is sweet. So Krishna is all sweet. And those who come in contact with the Vaishnav, who carries that sweetness in his or her heart, they become enchanted by it. This is how it happens, actually, how one becomes attracted back to the spiritual world. Because the Vaishnavs, they actually carry that sweetness in their heart. They're experiencing this achuta bhav. But if somebody's in self-realization, but they don't have the achuta bhav, then naishkarmyam apyachuta bhava varjitam nashobate jnanam. It's not beautiful. It's not nice. It's not an attractive thing. It's not enough to attract us away from this material world. Nashobate jnanam. It doesn't look so good. Nashobate jnanam. Even though it's free from the qualities of the material world. Naishkarmyam. No more karma. Naishkarmyam apyachuta bhava varjitam, but it doesn't have achuta bhava. You got to have the achuta bhava. Achuta bhava varjitam nashobate jnanam alam niranjanam. Kutakpuna shashvara bhadram ishvare. Then he says, what to speak of those who try to find something in this dead material world? It's all inauspicious. From beginning to end, whatever material enjoyment you think you're getting, it's a curse, actually. It's a burden. It sullies your existence, your consciousness, everything about it. So what is there in that? So the devotees, they are infused with this internal energy of the Lord. Mahatmanastu mam partha daivim prakritim ashrita bhajantyananya manaso gyatva bhutatim avyayam. Therefore, they're always engaged in Krishna's service, and the devotees, the Vaishnavas, are tasty. If you meet a Vaishnav, then you'll experience something that there's some enjoyment that's beyond the material enjoyment and beyond just the enjoyment of negation of the modes of material nature. But there's an actual happiness, and that's where the water is tasted through sadhu sangha, when you meet an actual sadhu. And then when you get that taste, you can't give it up. There's no stopping someone who's tasted that even one time. Then their endeavor will be to go back to that spiritual world. And then Krishna helps from within the heart to direct the person back home, back to guide it. And such a person who's gained such a taste becomes this dukeshu anuvigna manaha. Their mind becomes undisturbed by this world because they've already left it. They've already left it. They're not interested. There's no more vested interest in this world. After all, I'm only concerned with it. I only become disturbed when something is blown up, taken away, or changed when I have a vested interest in it, right? If I'm attached to something, then I become disturbed. Like people, they become attached to a football team. You have football in India? You sure do. Oh, cricket. Is it cricket? Okay, cricket. You have cricket in your country, and there was a World Cup or something? Is that what it's called? And the whole country went crazy. Now, see, if Pakistan won, then the whole country would have been morose. They would have suffered like anything. Because why? Because it's over the border by this much. Historically, probably same people, everything, but it's this side, that side. I have a vested interest, and therefore, what happens in the game? I have a great interest in it, and I become morose, or I become elated and happy. And similarly, when I, you know, there are people all over the world, they're dying right now in all kinds of circumstances. But if I get a phone call and it's somebody that I'm attached to, then I'll immediately become affected and morose. If we hear a car get smashed in the parking lot right out here, and then everyone thinks, that was my car, I parked right out there. And you run to the window and you're perspiring and you're breathing heavily and you're thinking, oh, my insurance is going to go up. And you look out and it's not your car after all. It's Hansapriya's car. And then you think, okay, it's fine. Let's go on hearing and chanting. Because we actually invest ourselves into this world. We become attached to it because of our vested interest. But those who have vested their interest in the spiritual world, dukeshu anuvigna manaha, that's where their mind is. So the miseries of this world can't affect them. They don't feel it anymore in the same way. They feel it, but in a different way. They feel sorry for those who are entangled in it. And therefore, Krishna says in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that a person who is a perfect yogi actually empathizes with the people of this world because he or she has been there. They've experienced it. They know the suffering of having a vested interest in this world. However, they've transcended Brahma Bhuta Prasanna Atma, Nashochati, Nakankshati, Samak Sarveshu Bhuteshu, Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. This is real life. To come to the Brahma Bhuta platform means that you've the burden of material existence, of my vested interest in this world has been taken away from me by the association of a Vaishnav. Because I've tasted something higher, I've gotten a higher perspective, a higher ideal, a higher goal. No longer is my goal in this material world. Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Param Sada Pashanti Suryaho Divivachakshirata Tam Tad Viproso Vipanyavo Jagriyam Vamsaha Smindate Vishnu Yat Paramam Param. Those who are walking in this world but their vision is there to the spiritual world are no longer affected in the same way as others are in this material world when they have a vested interest. Therefore, dukeshu anuvigna manaha, sukeshu vigatasbriha, vitaraga bhayakroda, stitadir munayacha. They become stitadir. Their mind is fixed on their goal in life, and it doesn't matter what comes. They stay fixed in the service of Krishna. So Vasudeva was a stitadir muni, and therefore Srila Prabhupada has given this verse in the purport, 256, and this is very important to take these instructions of Krishna to practice titiksha. Matra sparshas de konteya shitoshna sukadukada agama paino nityas tams titiksha shrabharti says, Arjuna, practice this tolerance. And when we tolerate the material world and the miseries and the happiness as well as the distress as well as the happiness, then we can develop this insight that I'm not my body. It comes and it goes. What I thought was misery, if I tolerate it, what else can you do when you're miserable? Can you do anything else? Can you fix it? It doesn't seem possible, right? Or is it just me? Are you having okay time out there? It's not possible to fix it. You just have to tolerate. So toleration is a practice. And we can't fake it either. Because you can only fake tolerating something for so long. Can fake humility, but you can't fake tolerance. Yes.
Might be a little bit stupid question, but you know.
We give $100 for stupid questions, but first let me see if I'm $100. All right, go ahead.
Whom were Vasudev and Devaki meditating upon when Krishna was not even born? Like, they were meditating on the Narayan form, or In those days, what were Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda were really praying to? Is it the Vishnu forms, or do they know about Krishna from the other kalpas, or what? Exactly?
Yes, they had premonition and dreams beforehand of someone more beautiful than Narayan coming. And then they thought, this practically is blasphemy to think like this, that someone more attractive than Narayan could come. But they had this conception that there was something so wonderful beyond even God. And they thought, how can we even think like that? This is practically heresy to think of something like that. So this is Krishna, whose qualities are beyond even Narayan, because he has this charming feature and his association with the wonderful associates, surrounded by these wonderful devotees, imbued with pure love and so on. Welcome, everyone. Please come. Hare Krishna. Thank you. Okay?
In his day-to-day life, how is Krishna's day-to-day life? He used to worship someone? Or
who?
Day-to-day life of Krishna as a boy.
Like. Yes. Well, in their household, they worship Narayan. They worship Shalagram Narayan. They worship Narayan. And Krishna is their little boy. They don't worship Krishna. Krishna's their kid. They see, and then they worship Narayan, please save our child, please protect our child, and so on and so forth. So in the Leela, in Vrindavan, the sweetness is that Krishna's opulence as God is covered. This Aishwarya is not seen there, only in little glimpses, but it doesn't, see the Aishwarya, it separates us from the intimacy. You know, if Obama walks in here, you know, then everyone will be like, well, of course, there'll be Secret Service agents all over the place kind of keeping us away, right? And then they'll obviously, oh, yes, Mr. President, there might be some kind of distance. You know, we can't just go up and say, hey, what's his first name? Barack. Hey, Barack. But in Krishna's Leela, you know, his friends are slapping him on the back, sometimes jumping on his back, sometimes wrestling with him, wrestle him to the ground, say, hey, you're not such a big man. You know, and Krishna enjoys this more than he does hearing the reverent prayers of the Vedas. Sahasra shirsha purusha sahasra gnana labhung ming krishna dovripa atitita sangulam. You know, the reverence and, you know, special prayers and everything. And Vrindavan is, hey, Gopal, come on, let's go. Let's go, let's go, you know, let's go to the forest. It's more intimate in that way. So in this family life, it's not... They don't see his opulence as the Supreme Personality of God. It is not his opulence is not manifest. And even when they see it, they just push it aside. When Mother Yashoda was looking at Krishna's mouth, because there was a rumor going around that he was eating dirt. And they were coming to Mother Yashoda and they were complaining and say, Krishna's eating dirt. And he's eating dirt, so she ran out and got him, bring him back, and said, Krishna, you're eating dirt. And said, well, my friends are just complaining about me because I won't play with them anymore. And they're making up lies. She said, all right, then I'll see for myself. You sit here, you open your mouth, I'm going to see for myself. Open your mouth. So she opens her mouth. He opens his mouth, and Mother Yashoda looks within. And then what does she see? The entire creation. And, you know, untold multitude of universes, and then she sees Krishna, and she sees Krishna sitting on her lap, and then again, you know, the creation is coming from him, and she becomes bewildered. All right, close your mouth, that's okay. Let's just go home. And so she just pushes aside that Aishwarya. It won't, in Vrindavan is the most opulent place, but there, for the sake of the intimacy of the Leela, That opulence is blocked. But, yeah. Yes.
So, how many exactly know that Krishna is the Supreme Person of Godhead when he was there? Like, a handful, very few know it. I know that Kunti, Akrura, and Vidura knows it, but...
You can take it from them.
I mean, how many more... I mean, who else knows it? I mean, is it handful or many, many?
You mean in the Leela or just
yeah,
in...
Yeah, when he was there, when he was actually there, then how many exactly know that he know? He's the Supreme Person of Godhead, is...
A handful.
Can you please tell them?
Pardon me?
Can you please tell their names? Like,
yes, the members of the Yadu dynasty could understand that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And there were some, in, you know, the Pandavas, they could see. But Prabhupada said in one lecture, he said, just a handful could understand that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead.